Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Karen Kann, and welcome to the Law of Attraction and Love radio show. How many of you would love to attract the perfect partner of your dreams? And how many of you would love to have a long-lasting, loving relationship with that person? Well, today I'm very excited because we have with us a very special guest, Julia Austin, and she's the author of a book called It Starts With You. And we are very, very excited, myself and my students are very excited to hear about her book because one of the important things that I teach about in the Law of Attraction is that your vibration is what attracts that ideal or so-called perfect partner to you. And your vibration is made up of everything, all your thoughts, all your emotions, all your experiences from your life up until this point. And some of the things I'm excited about talking with Julia and interviewing her today is about how do we start with a vibration that attracts that person to us and how do we keep a great relationship once we have it. And what I need to do right now is I've just got to get connected to the web here so I can unmute Julia's phone line. Very practical thing. It's one of those days where the computer's deciding to be a little slow. So please bear with me as we get that going. So anyway, while we're waiting for the computer to boot up this section, I would just want to tell you a little bit about this amazing experience that I had. Last week I was with my family. My father had his 70th birthday, and in our tradition, in our culture, the 70th birthday is extremely important, so we celebrate it, and we decided to have a party, or should I say he decided to have a party. He's not much of a party person, but because it was so important, he decided he did want to have a party, and so our whole family came in, and my sister flew in from Saskatchewan, Canada, to the Toronto area to be this party. Now, at this party, now she has two little kids, and one, Caitlin, she is almost going to be six in September, and then Dustin, who is just turned two not that long ago. And last year, when I met Dustin for the first time, right after his one-year-old birthday, and unfortunately, I only get to see them once a year. I didn't really get to know him because, you know, at 1 year, they're just kind of all over the place. And so I thought what a great intention it would be to get to know him a little bit better. And the reason I'm telling you this story is because I'm just learning about more about being present in my own life and enlarging my vibration and being, just being, really, instead of always doing and always thinking and just being. And he taught me this incredible lesson. I got a chance to babysit him for an evening when everyone else went to a movie. And here's this two-year-old and I, and we're playing. And then there was lightning and thunder, and the storm started. So I thought, wow, this is really cool. So I decided I would watch the storm for a bit. So I was teaching him, you know, that's lightning and this is called thunder. And, you know, the thunder wasn't really loud. So I said, well, it's kind of a baby thunder. And he loves babies. So he's like, baby? You know, so I'm like, okay, this is a baby thunder. So that's all we did. We watched the lightning and we listened to the thunder. And here he was at 2 years old. Lights are off inside the house. We're watching the outside almost practically in silence for an hour. An hour he was with me, snuggling up to me, just watching outside the window, not saying anything unless I'd said something. And I'm looking at this kid's eyes. I'm almost going to cry. And he is so in his being. He is so present, and he is so okay with doing completely nothing. You know, at one point we were just looking at each other in each other's eyes and just completely connecting. And there was no agenda. We weren't playing cards. We weren't trying to entertain each other. We weren't trying at all. We were just connecting. I'm like, wow, isn't that what we would love to have for every connection? You know, just that sense of humanity, that connection, that wonderfulness. So I learned from this two-year-old that they know something that us adults lose when we get older, this ability to connect, this ability to be quiet and just be. Anyway, so I needed to share that amazing story with you because it really, really affected me in a completely awesome and positive way. So here I am. I'm connected now, and I can press the magic button here and see if we can get this to work. All right. Now I know. There we go. Okay. So, Julia, are you there?
I am here, and I really am free.
Oh, well, thank you so much. So technology worked. I'm so excited that you're here with us today. Thank you so much for being part of our show and connecting with our listeners. I want to first appreciate you for being here today.
Thank you. I really enjoy being here.
Awesome. So your book is called It Starts With You, and why don't you just begin by telling us about your book?
My book is about how to be the right person, find the right person, and have a happy relationship for a lifetime. It's based on my experience and what I've learned from my life. My husband and I have been together for going on 21 years. However, he's my fourth husband. So I messed up a few times before I finally got it right, but I didn't get discouraged, and I decided that I would keep moving forward until I finally figured it all out, and then I have gleaned from my own experience. I've also interviewed several people to put the information together in my book, hopefully to help other women to avoid the mistakes that I've made, and if they have made some mistakes, to encourage them to all is not lost, and to continue on to find that right person for them.
Oh, that's wonderful. So your book is mainly geared towards women, correct?
This book is towards women. I have written another book for men that is yet to be published.
Oh, wow. Well, that's exciting. Okay, great. And what inspired you to write this book?
What inspired me to write this book is that I was looking out there and at some of the self-help books and books about relationships, and at that time, most of the books on the market were books about the other person. And in my experience, I found that I really needed to make sure that I was the right person first before I could get into a relationship that would be a happy, successful relationship. So that's why I decided to write my book, and why the title, It Starts With You, because you're talking about vibrations and how to have the right vibration. And what I realized in my failed relationships is I was putting off totally the wrong vibration. I was attracting the wrong kind of guys. I was getting into the wrong kind of relationships. And all of that had to change before I was ready to be in the right kind of relationship.
That's great. And how I totally agree with you. And is there a way that that in your book you discuss how you know when you're kind of there, or you know what I mean?
Well, the book starts out with a self-evaluation, and there are, I think, 82 or 84 questions to go through, and then there's a way to score the questions so that you kind of have an idea of what your starting point is and identifies problem areas and areas that you might want to work on in order to be a better person and be the kind of person that will attract the right kind of person. And so, yes, it does. It goes through step by step of all the things that go into being the best person that you can be, and then it moves on to finding the right person. So, yes, it does start out with that part.
Oh, that's great. So I think the self-evaluation part, I have a lot of that, you know, the questionnaires in my book as well, Creating Your Fairy Tale Love Life, because it's really important to know where you're starting from. Even if you have a map, if you don't know where, you know, you're starting from, it's hard to go anywhere.
That's true.
Yeah, so that's great that you have that at the beginning. And then why do you, if somebody were to ask you, you know, why does a healthy relationship have to start with yourself? How would you answer that?
I think the reason why is because I know in my own life, and I've also observed other women too, is that because of our society and the way a lot of us are brought up, we kind of get this feeling when we're young women that if we just have a man in our life, that he's going to make up for all the lacks that we have, and we go out there with the wrong idea, And that's why I think it's important to start with yourself and make sure that you're a whole person by yourself before you get into that relationship, rather than thinking that it's two halves that make a whole. It's really two whole people that join together to create a partnership.
I absolutely agree. I love that. And we also, unfortunately, in our common languaging, we're always talking about, you know, so-and-so is the better half or the other half. And it's, you know, it's one of those red flags that, you know, nowadays I'm like, eek, you know, I don't want to, say those things anymore. It's really the other whole. You know?
That's right.
But I'm sure I'd get really odd looks if I started saying that. It's just the other whole.
That's right. You could take that totally the wrong way.
They could take it the wrong way, totally. I was really curious it was really great that your book was endorsed by Dr. John Gray, and I'd love to know how that all happened and what your connection is with Dr. Gray, and if you don't mind, telling us that part.
I would love to tell you about that. Prior to asking for Dr. Gray's endorsement, I had no connection with him. It's not like he's, my second aunt's cousin's uncle or something like that. I didn't have any kind of in. I didn't know. It wasn't a friend of a friend or any of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I just decided that I wanted his endorsement. Dr. Gray has been somebody that I've long admired and appreciated for the work that he has done. And he really was one of the people that helped me to get a little bit more of a handle on understanding the differences between men and women. And so he was someone mm-hmm. I looked up to and admired, and I really wanted to get his endorsement. So I got on the Internet. I found his website, got some contact phone numbers, started making some phone calls, talked with his assistant, and found out what he required for even asking for his endorsement. And so I did all of those things and put all that together, sent my manuscript off to him, and I waited months and months and months, and I didn't hear from him for quite some time. In the meantime, my book was in the process of being copy edited and so forth, and it was supposed to actually have been published. My first edition was supposed to come out in January, and they kept making mistakes on the copy editing, and I was very frustrated. So I just, one day in March, I just prayed. I said, God, I just want to know why my book is being delayed. And then within an hour, I got an email from Dr. Gray's assistant, and she apologized for taking so long to get back to us, to me. And she said that Dr. Gray would be endorsing my book, and that I should receive that endorsement within a couple of days, which I did.
Wow.
And I also found out in further talking with his assistant that one of the reasons that he endorsed my book, besides thinking that it was really useful information, is that he really liked the little cartoon illustrations, because he said that his first book was illustrated, and that was one of the things that drew him to my book. So that's
cool. That's awesome. And you probably wouldn't have known that.
No, I wouldn't have. And so, I did ask for endorsements from other people that I didn't get, but that's okay. I got the endorsement that I really wanted, and that's important to me.
Oh, that's fabulous. And by the way, I didn't qualify this ahead of time. Not everyone knows who Dr. Gray is, but he's the author of the best-selling book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, which has probably been translated into multitude of languages all over the world, and has helped millions of people in their relationships. So that's really big that it got endorsed. And I wanted just to illustrate just for our listeners that amazing, when we face obstacles in our life, we have a choice of either choosing to stay with, feeling frustrated about them, or assuming that something is coming along the way, and that is why there's an obstacle there. It's
right.
For our higher good. And your situation is the perfect illustration of that, all the mistakes with the copy editing and everything. It was because it was literally the universe was holding you back until you got Dr. Gray's endorsement, and then
right.
You could complete. So that's a great story. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
One of the things I love about what you do, because it resonates with me, is that you're really honest about your own experiences and what you've gone through and some of the things that worked well and some of the things that didn't work so well. And tell us about how that is, you know, talking to your readers about your, you know, so-called failures and flaws and that sort of thing, and why you choose to do that.
It's a little bit uncomfortable starting out to do that, because I'm a very private person, and I like to kind of keep to myself as far as, you know, my own information and everything, except that the burden on my heart was so great to help other women that I realized that the only way I could do that was if I opened myself up and I became a little bit vulnerable and I shared from my experience, because without doing that, there wasn't any way that I could reach out and help the women that I wanted to help. And so I decided to step out of my comfort zone and put all of my stuff out there and just kind of say, okay, here it is, and I'm going to lay it out all there on the table for you so that you can benefit from the mistakes that I've made and so that you don't have to go through that pain and anguish. Because somehow I felt that if I was able to help even one woman, that it was worth it for me to step out of my comfort zone and put all of that out there to keep somebody else from going down that wrong road, or give someone else encouragement who had been down that road and now she's feeling broken and not knowing what to do, and to encourage her to keep on going because there is hope. So it's kind of a, and I don't want to sound like I'm a martyr or anything, because I don't feel that way at all. But I did feel that the benefit that would come from that was worth making that step, taking that step.
And I feel that in doing that and in being able to be vulnerable, certainly in the sort of public arena, I think really helps your readers also be able to drop down into their own vulnerability and realize it's all okay, that we're all human. And instead of, a lot of times, I know in the past when I've read, you know, some great books, I sort of look up to that person and think, well, I can't be like that author because they're just so perfect, you know. And even in my own medical practice years ago, it was about 10 years ago, I had one of my patients, and I was discussing with her, you know, anger management. And I said something like, you know, when I get angry, blah, 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 blah. And she looked at me with these big round eyes. She says, "You get angry?" You know, and I really, yeah, exactly. And I realized then, like, whoops, okay, you know, people are, you know, putting me up on this pedestal, and that's not really great and healthy, because then they can't, you know, they see your success, but then they don't see that they can do it too. And
right.
So I think it's absolutely wonderful that you're able to get into that vulnerability and truth, because then, you know, it encourages other people to be in their truth and in their honesty and know that if you can do it, then they can do it. And I think that is incredibly empowering.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, tell me a little bit about, you know, when you talked about the self-evaluation and once a person feels like they're okay with themselves or okay with you, then your book goes into making the relationship the priority. And what advice could you give our couples today to make their relationship a priority?
One of the things that that I realized is when I got into a relationship is that when you're in a relationship with someone, the relationship, I feel, becomes more important than the individual needs and wants and desires of the people that are in the relationship, and that you have to put the needs of the relationship sometimes ahead of what you might want for yourself. And one of the things that helped me to do that is when I was little, my mother always used to say, "What difference will it make 10 years from now?" And I didn't particularly appreciate it so much when I was a child, but when I grew up, I realized the value of that. And so I talk about that a little bit in my book about, you know, what difference will it make 10 years from now? And some of the examples I use are things like, you know, if you want to go out and have a lunch date with your best girlfriend sometime and your husband really wants to spend some time with you, sometimes, and I'm not saying always, but sometimes you might want to put off that lunch date with your girlfriend and do that another time so that you can spend time with your husband. And you know, ask yourself, well, what difference will it make 10 years from now if I rescheduled my lunch date with my girlfriend? Well, the answer is probably not going to make any difference at all. But on the other hand, if you continually do all your things by yourself and neglect your relationship with your husband and not put that relationship first, 10 years from now you might not have a relationship. And so you have to kind of look at the big picture and realize, you know, me insisting on having my own way, is it really all that important and will it make any difference 10 years from now? Or would it be better if I gave in to the, keeping the relationship whole and good so that I can build on that and have a relationship? And so that's sort of what I mean about making the relationship a priority. And, you know, it's a difficult adjustment, at least it was for me, to go from being single and making all my decisions about what I'm going to do and how things are going to go and into a relationship type thing where you have to consider the other person. You have to consider what's good for the two of you together. And so that's, I think, what I mean about making the relationship a priority.
I understand. And it seems like probably over the decades things have changed from in the past where women weren't working outside the home and the man did make a lot of the, you know, decisions for the couple. And then now, you know, swinging the other way, women like yourselves being very independent and you know, career women, you know, always making those decisions and what they want for themselves. And then when you go into a couple, then there's that a possible, you know, balancing act that has to occur. So I understand what you're talking about. And, well, let's talk about how you went, you mentioned earlier about researching for your book, and can you tell us a little bit about how you did that and when you were writing your book, who you interviewed?
The research that I did, a lot of it I did online, because the internet is a wonderful tool, and I don't know how I could have done everything that I did without that tool at my disposal. So that was really a wonderful thing for me. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time looking stuff up on the internet and finding the quotes that I wanted to use. And it wasn't always finding the quotes. Sometimes it was finding out who said that, because there were certain quotes that I grew up with that I heard from other people or from my parents, and I had no clue who said that. And so in writing a book, I had to give credit where credit was due. And so a lot of it was looking up that kind of information on the internet and also getting the statistics together and getting the research information together that supported my points. And so I used the internet for all of that. Some of the people that I interviewed were people that had been married a very long time, and I asked them things like, what did they do to make their relationship last, and what kind of suggestions or advice would they give to readers who wanted to know, well, what do you do to make it work? And so I interviewed several people to get information along those kind of lines. And so that's kind of some of the research I went into, and I, you know, found people that could kind of just add supporting information to what I was saying, and just organize that and put it all together so that it wouldn't just be me talking about, you know, what I experienced, but it would also be collaborating information that would support my points.
Oh, great. And it sounds like that you kind of segue those, pieces of research with your own experiences with your marriages, right?
Right, right. And so I just kind of all put it together. It was kind of like putting a puzzle together, and it all came together, and it makes this really nice picture, and I feel that it, you know, it goes along in a conversational style from beginning to end in a logical order, and so that it's real easy to follow.
Awesome. Would you be willing to share with our listeners some of the sort of key learnings that you went through as you were going through your various relationships, some key points that they can study from you?
Yeah, I'd be glad to share that. One of the things that I realized along the way, and it took it took 2-3 times before I finally got this message, and that is that rescue relationships don't work. And what I mean by that is I grew up in a home where I learned a lot of codependent behaviors, and so I was going out in the world as a young woman thinking, oh, you know, you poor thing, I need to fix you.
Okay, I know that one.
So, and because of that, and that's kind of what you were talking about earlier about the vibrations, I'm putting off these vibrations of codependent, you know, here,
right.
Let me help you, here, let me fix you. And so as a result of that, I was being attracted to and attracting men that had addictive behaviors and all kinds of psychological problems, and you know, to try to fix these guys, and kind of subconsciously, what was going on, I think, is that I was thinking that, you know, if I could just fix this guy, he'd be so appreciative, he will love me, and that is a faulty premise, and it doesn't work that way. In fact, when you get into that type of a codependent relationship with someone, not only do they not appreciate you, but they actually resent you for trying to fix them, because most of the time they don't want to be fixed. And
right.
They have to get to the point in their own life where they realize they have issues and want to change themselves. And so one of the things that I learned is you cannot change another adult. You can't. They have to change themselves, and you have to change yourself. You don't go around changing other people and them changing you. So that was one of the key things that I learned. And in going through Al-Anon, which was real helpful for me to get over some of my codependent behaviors, is I learned that I'm not responsible for any other adult, that each adult is responsible for themselves, and they're accountable, and they have to take responsibility for their own choices, for their own actions, and I'm not responsible for any other adult. And so those are a couple of things that I learned along the way, and I think it's helped me to have a much better relationship with the husband I'm with now. And that's why I think we've been able to be together for 20 years, and we're still very, very happy together.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I think you've really hit on a key pattern that I certainly see in my medical office a lot, is that exactly what you're talking about, that rescue relationship or rescue behavior. And I definitely had, you know, the same thing going with my first marriage, and my husband was, he had some manic depressive tendencies, not full-blown, but it was always trying to make him happy. If I could only make him happy, you know, then everything would be fine. And it was a long haul, and like you, I discovered that it doesn't really work that way. And so it's really cool that you made that amazing discovery. And if, just for our readers who don't understand the terminology codependent, could you help us with that definition?
What my understanding of codependent is that someone that, well, the dependent part is the person who has some kind of a addiction or addictive behaviors, addicted to drugs, alcohol, or, you know, whatever. And the codependent is the person who enables that other person, the person that is coming alongside and making the excuses and trying to make up for the lack in that other person and trying to fix that other person and just making it easy for that person to continue on in their addictive behaviors and not doing anything for them to really get better and get help, but just sort of being there to say, oh, that's okay, you know, you're forgiven, and that's kind of the codependent thing, and feeling that you don't deserve any better than that. And it's not a very happy place to be, because you always feel like you're never good enough, and if you only could do more, then this person would be okay, and you start taking the blame for their addictive behaviors. And it's a real unhealthy kind of a relationship.
And could you explain why somebody would do those things or be codependent? Like, what's their payoff?
I think the payoff, part of the payoff is you have this false sense of control.
Yeah.
I think that that it's up to you to do all these things, and it's up to you to make sure that this person is okay. And it's kind of ironic, and it's kind of hard to understand, but it's almost like you're happy being miserable. And I, you know, it's kind of hard to put that all into words. And, you know, I remember being in that place, and it was like I was so miserable so much of the time, I didn't know how to be anything but miserable. So it was almost like I created this misery because I was familiar with it. And so stick with the familiarity because that's what you know. And the same kind of thing happens with battered women. And fortunately, I was never in that kind of a relationship, but I have talked to other women. I've kind of studied that. I did take some psychology classes in college. And, you know, and people standing from the outside, they say, well, why doesn't she leave? Well, the reason she doesn't leave is because it's familiar. She knows how to deal with that because she's learned how to deal with it, and she doesn't know anything else. And so we oftentimes will stick with something that's really unhappy and miserable in a lot of ways because it's familiar to us, and we don't know what to do to change that and break that cycle so that we can have a better relationship. And actually, after my husband and I got together and things were going well, it was an adjustment for me to adjust to a healthy relationship because I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop and kept thinking, well, this can't be this as good as it seems to be. It's got to go wrong. It's got to, you know, he's probably thinking in the back of his mind he's going to leave me, or, you know, and it did take a while to adjust to that, to a healthy relationship after being in all of these unhealthy relationships. So I think that the familiarity thing and the, you know, low self-esteem and thinking you don't deserve any better than that, and you know, I'm not happy here, but this is the best I can do, and you just kind of feed all of these false notions into your own head. And I think that's where, you know, getting into reading more positive material is something that will help you to start making that change and that transition, so that you can step out of those unhealthy kinds of relationships and into a more positive, healthy relationship.
I totally agree. Absolutely. And just for our listeners, in case you want to call in live, I want to just tell you what the number is here on Blog Talk Radio for this show. We're talking today with the author of It Starts With You, and this is Julia Austin. And our call-in number today is 347-945-6313. Again, that's 347-945-6313, in case you want to call in live and ask us a question. So, Julia, let's move on. You mentioned just a moment ago about low self-esteem. Could you expand on that in terms of, you know, women and experiencing low self-esteem and what happens when we experience low self-esteem and what to do?
Well, I have been studying this whole thing about low self-esteem and how there's so many women that seem to be in that place, and I'm trying to kind of get a grip on why that happens. And I haven't figured out why, but I do know that it does happen. And so, you know, I'm trying to take steps to help women to come out of that. And the low self-esteem thing is that, you know, that I don't deserve very much and I'm not worth anything and you know, nobody really is going to ever pay attention to me. And I think that some of it comes from childhood and things that we experience when we're growing up. And one of the things, I have to share this story with you because it illustrates so perfectly how that sometimes we can totally misinterpret the actions of other people around us. And that's when I was in high school, I didn't get asked out on dates, and we even had a Sadie Hawkins dance every year where the girls would ask the guys, and I could never even get anybody to go with me to that when I was doing the asking. And it was just very, very unhappy for me growing up as a teenager, because I would sit by the phone on Saturday night just waiting for the phone to ring and someone to ask me out, and no one ever did. And wow. I interpreted all of that I wasn't desirable, I wasn't attractive, you know, I felt like I was the proverbial ugly duckling and all of this stuff. And later on, after I graduated from high school, a year or two after I was out of high school, I was in town and I ran into one of the guys that I went to high school with, and we started a conversation. He said, "You know, I always wanted to ask you out, but you are so pretty, I was afraid you'd say no." And all of a sudden, I had this epiphany, and I thought, oh, my gosh, here I'm interpreting these guys not asking me out as that I'm undesirable and I'm not attractive and all this kind of stuff, when actually it was their own insecurities that
right.
were preventing them from asking me out. And so I think that a lot of the self-esteem issues, low self-esteem issues, come from our misinterpreting the actions and the attitudes of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is kind of this self-perpetuating thing that when you get into that space and when you start down that road, then it's like this filter that goes across everything that comes into you. And so you're misinterpreting all this stuff that happens. And it's not personal. A lot of the times it's not personal, and it sometimes has a lot more to do with where the other person is than with how they perceive you. And so I think that sometimes it's important to step out of yourself and get a little bit more objective and not take everything so personally. And I know that seems to be kind of my personality, is I tend to take things personally. And I've learned over the years to, when someone snubs me or when someone is grouchy to me or they're mean or whatever, quite often it doesn't have anything to do with me. It has
right.
to do with what's going on with them. And so you need to kind of get to a place where you don't take so many things personally. You don't, you know, wear all your feelings on your sleeve and you know, get hurt all the time, because a lot of times it's not about you. It's not about you know, what's going on with you. It's about where that other person is in their space right then.
That is a huge, wonderful piece of advice that we can take everything that happens to us non-personally and be able to, you know, even in the workspace, if somebody is, if your boss goes into work grumpy, I just was talking to a friend the other day, she said the same thing, like she automatically assumed there's something that she did that was wrong. And
right.
then most recently, yeah, he has decided, like, oh, wait a second. Well, maybe it doesn't have to do with me. Maybe he's just grumpy because he's grumpy.
Right.
And but she's had to stop herself from assuming that it was her. And how often, I mean, when you said, yeah, you tend to do this, I'm like, yeah, you and, you know, 25 other million people, you know, including myself. And it's actually, a practice, just like a yoga practice, to catch ourselves doing that changing our filters, right? Changing our perception. So that it's so true. I'm so glad you said that today, because it's a wonderful piece of advice, and it's great to be reminded of that. So in your book, let's go back to your book for a moment here. You talk a little bit about, well, quite a bit about how to determine if somebody's compatible with you. And I know certainly my readers that are single and looking for love really want to know about that. So what can you tell them about that?
I do spend a lot of time on that. And the reason I spend so much time on it is because I found from my own experience that it's really, really important, and that it's great to be in love with someone and have all those fluttery feelings and all of that. But when it comes right down to day-to-day living, it's important that you pick somebody, or, you know, get into a relationship with somebody that has some basic compatibility, because when you're going to be living together day in and day out, if there are some issues that where you're not compatible, you need to identify those before you get married. And I know that my first three relationships, there was a lot of incompatibility there that I didn't identify until after we were married, and that's not the time to find it out. And I spend a lot of time on that, because I've been around brides and girls that are engaged because of some of the previous businesses my husband and I have been in. And what I've seen is that as soon as that girl gets that ring on her finger, she spends all the rest of her time up to the wedding planning her wedding and making right. sure that she picks out the right colors and the right dress and all of those kind of things, when really she should be putting some time into sitting down with the groom and making sure that this is the man she wants to spend the rest of her life with. And so that's why I think it's so important to go over those things. And I think it's also a kind of a tendency for people to, and especially women, I think, to not want to talk about anything that they think might be controversial because they don't want to make waves and they don't want to
right.
rock the boat, and they're afraid that, oh, but if he doesn't like this about me, or if we find out a problem, we're going to break up. Well, I just came up with a quote that I hope someday will be a quotable quote, and that is, better a broken engagement than a broken home.
Mm.
And if there are issues that are going to break you up when you're engaged or seriously dating, then those things are going to break you up after you're married. And you better find out about them before you get married and there's children involved and you just have a really big mess. And so as painful as it might be to consider, you know, the controversial things before you get married, it's much, much better than finding out about those things afterwards. And so that's why I spend so much time talking about the compatibility things and urging couples to sit down and talk about those areas where there may be controversy and make sure that you can work through all of those things and come to some kind of agreement. And if you don't come to an agreement, then I do have a chapter in there about how to break up without hating each other, because it's not necessary to hate each other just because you identify that you're not really compatible and it's probably not best for you to continue your relationship.
Oh, that's great. That's a good point, is that you don't I think a lot of society assumes that if somebody breaks up or two people break up that they automatically have to hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they think it's – I went to a wedding – no, wait. Sorry, it was a funeral one time, and I had broken up with my first husband, and but we were both there, you know, because it was the best man for our wedding. It was his father that died, and it was really weird because people just were really, like, dancing around it, and they were really uncomfortable. And later I said, are you guys okay? You know, and they're like, well, you know, it was kind of awkward. We didn't know how you felt about Sean being there. And I'm like, fine, we hugged each other. I mean, like, what do you – like, they weren't seeing what was really true.
Mm-hmm.
Was that it was amicable, we hugged each other, it was, you know, he was great, he was there, I was there, you know, but they had their own stuff, and they just assumed that, you know, we had to hate each other or something because we were broken up, and it was so not true.
Right.
So it's great that you have that section in there in your book. And about the compatibility, how would people use your book to determine how compatible they are with each other?
There are several questions to sit down and talk with about each other, and things like, you know, career paths and preferences of where you want to live, and do you want to live in the country, you want to live in the city, and I recognize that sometimes because of people's chosen profession that they may not always be able to live where they would really like to live, but I think it's important to talk about what your preferences are. I think it's important to talk about your core beliefs, your outlook on life, what kind of sense of humor you have, and your finances. That's a really huge one. What do you think about money and how money should be managed? And one of the little illustrations I have is this girl, you know, that's walking along with all these shopping bags, and the caption says that, you know, that if the groom came from a family where money was always tight and it was always, you know, hard to come by, that he might not understand her shopping and spending $1,000 on clothes. And
right.
So you need to talk about all of the different areas of life that are going to come up sometime in your relationship, and just kind of put all of that stuff out on the table and just sort through it all. And hopefully the questions that I have in my book are springboards to further discussion to identify any of those areas that could become a huge problem later on. And so, you know, I just kind of go through that systematically. And I just carefully considered all of that stuff before I put it in there. And I tried to be pretty comprehensive in touching on all the different areas where couples could be incompatible, and to suggest to people sit down and just talk about all of that stuff before you walk down the aisle, please.
Well, I hope they do. I certainly could have used this information when I was, 19, 20, going out with my first and only boyfriend at that time, who then became my husband. And I think we were just too needy. And at that young age, I may or may not have taken the advice. But, of course, looking back, I think, well, it'd be great if we if we'd had that advice. So for those of you out there who, who aren't sure, please, please read Julia's book on that section. I highly recommend it. Like I said, I could, it's so clear right now that my first husband and I were completely incompatible. We were both very nice and good people, but completely incompatible in so many ways. And but we didn't have this kind of we had lots of self-help books back then, but nothing like this. And it would have been incredibly helpful. So I'm so glad that you are pursuing teaching people this very, very important aspect.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I have a question about, you have a definition of love on page 13 in your book, which tosses the reader into the Bible. And that, there's an opening for the platform on faith on page 41. And why, I wanted to ask you, why is this stuff, well, if you could just read it for our listeners, and why do you think this definition of love is important?
Well, in putting all that stuff in there, first of all, it's pretty obvious when you read my book that I am a Christian and that the Bible is the book that I go to for wisdom. And the thing that I found about the Bible is whether or not you believe in the inspiration of the Scriptures, there's time-tested wisdom there that is valuable and is important regardless of where you're coming from as far as your faith goes. And in looking around for a definition of love that was very grounded, that's the definition of love in 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, was the best definition that I could find, because when you look in our society and our culture, through the media and the movies and the magazines and all of that, the kind of love that that is portrayed there is this possessive, selfish kind of love.
Yes.
And I wanted to find something that was more grounded and was more practical and more workable as a model for love, and I couldn't find any better definition than the definition of love in the first chapter, 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. And so that's why I used that as the basis for determining whether you love yourself. And the reason that I talk about loving yourself, and I mean that in the proper way, not in a narcissistic kind of way, is because the Bible also says to love your neighbors yourself. And if you don't love yourself the right way, then it's impossible to love your neighbor the right way. And I know those were some of the issues that I had as a very young woman, because I didn't love myself the right way, and I was always beating myself up all the time, and I was down on myself continually. And as long as I was in that space, there really wasn't any way that I could love somebody else the right way, because I didn't love myself the right way. And so that's why I kind of start with that and talk about that and talk about all the qualities of love that will help you to move into a real positive relationship later on.
Oh, and I love what you said about, I grew up Catholic and Christian as well, and I always heard that, love others or love thy neighbor as yourself, and it took me, oh gosh, how many years, decades, whatever, to realize that I misinterpreted that to mean love your neighbors more than yourself. And yeah, no, it was like when it finally dawned on me, it's like as yourself, I was like, oh my gosh, I've been giving, and I think a lot of women do this in their relationships, especially in codependent ones too. They just keep giving and thinking that they have to give more to others than they do themselves and love others more than, and as you pointed out, I mean, it doesn't really work. You really, if you're not loving yourself and accepting yourself fully, you really can't translate that into loving others fully or what you said in the right way. So, yeah, that's great that you mentioned that quote, because that really resonates with me. And what challenges have you faced as a Christian woman? And I know for myself too, like having been through a divorce, and my family, a divorce was a huge no-no, and my parents went through a lot of stress, just, you know, the thought that I was divorced, and they were so afraid that I was going to be unhappy. And so just, you know, what has that experience brought for you?
It has been challenging because there are some Christians that have a real problem with, you know, being divorced and so forth. And it was a real struggle for a long time until I realized that sometimes the attitudes of my Christian brothers and sisters didn't really mirror the scriptures and didn't mirror what Christ had to say on the whole issue. And if you look in the scriptures about what Jesus says on the whole thing, you know, he comes to people with hope and forgiveness and mercy and compassion. And so some of the characters that I really relate to in the Bible is, you know, the woman at the well, that she'd had seven husbands and she was living with somebody she wasn't married to. And rather than coming at her, condemning her, Jesus came and offered hope and offered love and mercy and compassion. And so it was the holding on to what the scriptures said that helped me to get through, even when I was rejected and condemned by some of my fellow Christians. And so, I also talk about the whole thing about Christianity and how that, unfortunately, not everyone who wears the name Christian is practicing what the Bible teaches. And when I talk about being a Christian, I'm not talking about just giving it lip service. I'm talking about practicing what the scriptures say. And that if
right.
you look within those pages of the Bible and you go by what God says, you know, the kind of people that we're supposed to be, then you're not going to be judgmental. You're not going to, you know, condemn other people because they're not perfect, because none of us are perfect. And so I think it's important to put that in perspective too, because there's been a lot of stuff that's been perpetrated under the name of Christianity that's not at all what the Bible talks about. And so you have to look beyond that and realize that those people are also human and maybe they're not practicing exactly the way that it's written in the Bible.
Well, there's certainly wars started over
exactly.
differences which is not necessarily practicing peace and compassion and love, which is all what we want for each other. And that's a really good point. I know I had great difficulty shifting from, I had very staunch Catholic beliefs, and then my first husband, one of his gifts to me was really opening my eyes to the facts of, you know, that you know, the Christian history or Catholic history is not clean. You know, there's a lot of things that I didn't know about history that really tore me apart, and it took me a while to come back to what I deem as more spirituality rather than religiosity, to come back to spirit and connection with God, because I didn't know these other facts about wars and people being killed in the name of God, you know, that kind of thing. I was very naive, and so that was his gift to me, was to open my eyes, and so now I've come full circle, you know, and back to the place where I can, you know, feel the spirituality and be completely accepting of the history that has been in the past. Well, let's talk a little bit about how people can connect with you. First of all, where can we buy copies of It Starts With You, the new book that you've written?
Well, it's all over the internet, on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and Borders.com, you know, all the major book websites. Also, I have a website up, itstartswithyou.com. I was very pleased to get that domain name, the title of my book.
And, awesome.
There's a lot of information about events and things that are going on and appearances and that sort of thing. I am planning a book tour starting September 16th to go across the northern United States from North Idaho all the way to Boston and back, and stop at 23 cities along the way. And
wow, great.
About that and the exact times and dates will be posted on my website. You can order an autographed copy of my book from my website. There's a shopping cart on there. And any bookstore can, if they don't have it on the shelf already, they can order it. And so if
okay.
you if you go online and you can go to Amazon.com to get the pertinent information of the full title and the author and the ISBN, and go into any bookstore and they can order it for you if it's not already on the shelf. I did a book signing Saturday at Hastings, and it went really well. And so they have, locally, they have my book on the shelf, and I'm guessing as there's more and more demand that more and more bookstores will be actually have it on the shelf. So.
Oh, that's great. And do you have upcoming events other than your book signing you mentioned?
Not just yet, but, you know, I think I have a couple of other podcasts that are coming up later on this year. I'm working on some things. I have somebody that's a local radio station is trying to get a television appearance for me in Spokane, Washington, so I'm looking forward to that. But whatever is coming up will all be always be updated on my website at startswithyou.com.
All right, great. So it startswithyou.com.
Correct.
And awesome. And are you working on any other book projects?
I'm glad you asked. I mentioned just briefly that I have a book for men. The title of that is Stop Screwing Around, What You Need to Know When You're Ready to Sit Down and Find the Girl of Your Dreams.
Oh, I love that title.
And I'm also working on a couple of other books. I have ideas for about 10 or 12 books, but I just need to find the time to start putting all of those together. So I have a lot I want to share with people.
Oh, that's great. Well, I know what you mean about having, you know, the 10 books in your head and deciding which one you're going to put your focus on.
Right.
Well, this has been, we only have a couple minutes left, but I just want to take the time to really, again, thank you, Julia, for being on the show today and being such a great gift to the world from your contributions, your own personal experience, what you've gone through, and I think that anyone that has gone through a hard time, one of the greatest gifts is being able to share their wisdom from having gone through that and helping others to hopefully prevent them from going through the same heartache and if they have already, to give them hope. So I just want to really appreciate you. And, everybody out there, go get her book. You know, totally awesome. Any last words, Julia, that you would like to tell us?
Well, I do have a way that people can contact me on my website through email, and I would just encourage anybody that wants to ask me any questions to go on my website and send me an email, and I'll get back to you just, you know, as soon as I possibly can. And anybody that, you know, that picks up my book and reads it, if you have any questions, you have any comments, I want to be accessible because I know that's one of the things when I've picked up books, there's sometimes it's like, well, I'd like to ask the author this, and I don't have any way to get a hold of them. So I just want my readers to know that I am accessible. If you have any questions, please email me. I'd love to hear from you.
Oh, that's very generous of you. That is awesome. Well, great. Fabulous. So I guess until next time, and I look forward to your next book. So we'll have you back on the line.
Great. I'd love to come back.
Awesome. Well, have a great week.
You too.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for having me on your show.
My pleasure. All right, goodbye, everybody, and make sure that you mark it as your favorite show if you like today's show. I really appreciate it. Bye for now, and we'll see you next time.